Welcome to PharmaTalk Radio Podcasts. This podcast is focused on neoadjuvant immune checkpoint blockade, a window into treatment response and primary resistance from the 2022 Immuno-Oncology 360 Summit. For more information about the Immuno-Oncology 360 Summit, our editorial, podcasts, and webinars, please visit io360summit.com. Thank you and enjoy the podcast.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for the very kind introduction, and thank you to the organizers for inviting me to participate in this conference. Today, I'm going to be talking about a new approach to using immune checkpoint blockade called neoadjuvant immune checkpoint blockade. This is very relevant to the biomarker session that we had here yesterday. It provides us with a pre-surgical window into treatment response and resistance. And I'll explain a bit more about that. I have some disclosures related to the talk today. All right, so I'd like to start by just briefly setting the stage for where are we now with the development of PD-1 pathway blockade as a form of cancer therapy. I think this audience understands how the pathway works. We know that PD-1 is a dominant immune checkpoint, although there are many checkpoints, probably three dozen or more, and you've heard about some of the other target molecules at this conference. But in the center of this diagram is the T cell, which we think is the most important cell involved in the PD-1 pathway. Once the T cell recognizes components of tumor antigens, it then needs a second signal to tell it how to behave. So that can either be an inhibitory signal or a stimulatory signal. In the diagram here, if the T cells are stimulated, they then become activated. And signs of that are T cell proliferation, secretion of cytokines, development of killing activity against cancer cells, and also trafficking around the body seeking out sites of metastatic disease. But what's shown in the lower right there is that at the same time that these T cells become activated, they start expressing immune checkpoints, which will eventually turn them off. And this is part of a normal mechanism in the immune system to avoid normal tissue inflammation during an immune response. But in the case of cancer, cancer cells can express the ligand PD-L1. When that molecule interacts with PD-1 on the T cells, it will turn them off. So these T cells can recognize cancer, they can traffic to cancer, but once they get there, if the tumor expresses PD-L1, they will be turned off. So then what was done in the clinic was to develop drugs that either block the PD-1 receptor on T cells or the PD-L1 ligand on tumor cells, and it turned out that blocking either side of that pathway could lead to the regression of very advanced cancers that had not responded to other forms of therapy at the time. So where are we now? In the United States, we have seven drugs that have been approved by the FDA to block this pathway, including four that block PD-1 and three that block PD-L1. And we also have three biomarkers that help us find patients who are more likely to respond to these treatments. Now, none of these biomarkers are black and white, so this is not like finding a BRAF mutation and then deciding that you're going to use a BRAF MEK inhibitor combination in melanoma. But these markers increase the likelihood of response. The first one that was developed was PD-L1 immunohistochemistry. Chemistry, staining pre-treatment tumor tissues to see if they express PD-L1, the ligand that I just mentioned. This has been approved by the FDA in certain cancer types where it was shown to be helpful, but it's not approved across the board in all cancer types. The next two are genetic markers that are approved across all cancer types. So no matter what kind of cancer you have, if your tumor has microsatellite instability, or if it has a high mutational burden, you qualify to receive anti-PD-1 therapy. because your cancer is more likely to respond if it has either of these markers, which reflect the fact that the highly mutated tumor expresses what we call neoantigens, abnormal proteins that have never been seen before by the immune system, and so they should be very strong immune stimulants. And so currently in the U.S., we have approvals to use anti-PD-1 or PD-L1 drugs in 20 different kinds of cancers. And they're listed here roughly in the order that the approvals were received. And I'm showing there some response rates from various published trials where the drugs were given either in the first line or later line treatment settings. This entire area of medical research is generally thought to be successful because the Nobel Prize was awarded to Drs. Allison and Hanjo a few years ago for their discoveries in this area, and also commercially because two anti-PD-1 drugs are among the top best-selling drugs of any kind globally for any disease. So there has been a real uptake in standard medical practice for this treatment. But if you look at those response rates, you see that we don't have 100% of patients responding with any of those cancers. And there are also some cancer types that are not on the list, like prostate cancer and pancreatic cancer. They do not respond to anti-PD-1 or PD-L1 as a single drug. So we still have a lot of work to do. Now, once we established that these drugs were broadly effective across many cancer types and also that they were relatively safe to use, we began to ask if we could use them at earlier stages in the evolution of cancer. And so I kind of think of this as preventive medicine, because what we're trying to do here is prevent operable tumors from relapsing and moving to stage four. And so the first results in this area came from melanoma, where we used checkpoint blockers postoperatively in patients who, according to their CT scans, it seemed as if we could remove all of the tumor surgically, but because of certain properties of their cancer, we knew that the patients were at high risk for relapse after surgery. And so we now have FDA approvals to use anti-CTLA-4 or one of two anti-PD-1 drugs, Nivo or Pembro, in the post-surgical setting. These were shown to very significantly delay the time to relapse after surgery. Recently, there have been additional adjuvant approvals for bladder cancer, esophageal cancer, and non-small cell lung cancer. And I think this list will only grow because there are so many clinical trials in this area now. But with that information, we asked a new question. Could we use immune checkpoint blockade before the patient underwent surgery? Again, surgery with intent to cure, but these patients are at high risk for relapse because of certain properties of their profile. And so this is called neoadjuvant or pre-surgical immune checkpoint blockade. Now, scientifically, there are reasons why giving anti-PD-1 before surgery might be better than giving it after surgery. We published a review on this a couple of years ago. I would refer you to this review for the details, but essentially, we think that anti-PD-1 can act as a primer for systemic anti-tumor immunity while the tumor mass is still in place. One way this might work on the upper left of this diagram is that we might be activating T cells that have already reached the tumor site, but as I showed you earlier, they're stalled because of the presence of PD-L1 there, and so we block that pathway reactivate those T cells, which then traffic into lymph nodes and eventually get into the bloodstream and then percolate systemically, find sites of micrometastatic disease, which would be the cause of post-surgical relapse and destroy the tumor there. The other way this might work would be to enhance T cell education in tumor draining lymph nodes. And again, those educated, activated T cells then get into the bloodstream and find micrometastatic disease. We don't think that these mechanisms are mutually exclusive. In fact, we think that they work together. But that's a hypothesis based on animal models, and we need to know from real human tissues whether things like this are actually occurring. Now, when we first took neoadjuvant immunotherapy into the clinic, we had to weigh the risks and benefits. And here's where medical oncologists had some lengthy discussions with surgical oncologists about how long could we give this kind of treatment in a patient who was going to go to the operating room with intent for cure. What was the preoperative interval that would be safe? And so on the risk side on the left there, if the anti-PD-1 did not work in that patient, then their cancer would likely progress, and there's always the possibility of losing a surgical option. Also, these treatments do have side effects, and if the side effects are severe, which is not common, but it does happen, that could also cause surgical delay. But we thought that the benefits outweighed the risks. If the patient did have a tumor that responded to immunotherapy, then the tumor size would be smaller and maybe surgery would be easier. And in an extreme case, let's say that the tumor disappeared during the pre-surgical treatment interval, maybe there would be no need for surgery. And that part is still debatable, by the way. Also, because we would have the entire surgical specimen to examine, we now had access to a new biomarker for long-term outcomes like relapse-free and overall survival. And this biomarker is pathologic response. So our pathologists can look at the entire surgical specimen and tell us if they still see viable tumor cells in the specimen or what percent of regression has occurred. And finally, for the first time, we now have adequate tissues to do in-depth biomarker studies. And because these patients have not had prior cancer therapies, so they're only getting the immune checkpoint blocking systemic therapy, we have a very pure scientific situation here where we have one therapy, surgery, specimen, and now we can examine this for biomarkers to try to understand more about the mechanism of action of these drugs. So this just shows you all the different kinds of scientific studies that we can now do with access to these tissues. So on the left there, I'm showing a primary lung cancer is treated with neoadjuvant anti-PD-1. And so from that, we have access to the primary tumor tissue. We also have access to normal lung tissue, which would be part of a standard resection. And we have access to tumor-draining lymph nodes where a lot of the immunological activity occurs. And again, this is part of a standard lung resection for lung cancer. We can preserve those tissues in formalin and do things like immunohistochemistry, multiplexing technologies that you heard about yesterday. We can isolate RNA and DNA for whole exome sequencing, gene expression profiling, TCR sequencing. And now we have large quantities of viable tissue, and that plays into single-cell RNA-seq assays. And again, these were things that we could not do before with the standard core needle biopsies that were used for so many years to look at biomarkers in this area. So the first report of neoadjuvant anti-PD-1 in any cancer type was in lung cancer. This was an article in New England Journal in 2018, and it came from a collaboration between Johns Hopkins, my home base, and Memorial Sloan Kettering. The lead authors were Patrick Ford from Hopkins and Jamie Chaft from Memorial. And I want to just show you a few things that were learned from that trial that have played out now in many neoadjuvant trials that followed in multiple cancer types. So first was that the changes in cancer tissues that occur as a result of anti-PD-1 treatment can occur very rapidly, and much more rapidly than we detect with CT scanning. So what we found in this rather small study, 21 patients, was that CT scan response, which we call RECIST response, occurred in only 10% of the patients. But a major pathologic response, which was defined as only 10% or less residual viable tumor cells, that major pathologic response occurred in 45% of the cases. And remarkably, this occurred after only 4 weeks of anti-PD-1 therapy, 4 weeks. Now, another thing that we learned was about some of the characteristics, the pathologic characteristics of immune-mediated tumor regression. This looks very different than what a tumor looks like if it's responding to chemotherapy or kinase inhibitors. What this looks more like is normal wound healing. And so there's a lot of literature, surgical and other kinds of literature, about what happens when you have a wound, let's say a skin incision that heals. And it turns out that a cancer responding to anti-PD-1 has a lot of those same characteristics, which are shown here in terms of proliferative fibrosis, sheets of infiltrating immune cells, neovasculature, and tertiary lymphoid structures. And so this is the work of Janice Taubin and Tricia Cottrell at Hopkins and Mike Tetzlaff, who was at MD Anderson at the time. And finally, now we have this new marker, pathologic response, that we can try to use to predict long-term outcomes in these patients. So the big question is, will pathologic response that we see after 4 weeks of anti-PD-1 therapy correlate with relapse-free or overall survival? And it appears that it does now in multiple studies in different cancer types. I'm showing you here a study that we did in Merkel cell carcinoma, which is a rare but very aggressive form of skin cancer, where after 4 weeks of anti-PD-1 therapy, we had almost 50% of patients with a complete pathologic response, meaning no viable tumor cells remaining in the specimen. And here I'm showing you an example of one of our patients. You can see the very large lesion that she has on her face that was well on the way to disappearing after only 17 days of treatment. She went to the operating room a couple of weeks after that, and there were no living tumor cells in the specimen, and she did well for years afterwards. And so in this trial, as you see in the Kaplan-Meier curve on the right, if the tumor had a complete response, those patients were very likely to be relapse-free 2 years later. And we're still following these patients and may at some point publish a longer-term follow-up. If the tumor did not have a complete response, the patients did not fare as well. And so now this kind of approach shows us a group of patients who may need more aggressive surgery. And so we can tailor different either surgery or post-operative medical treatments for these patients. And so maybe those patients need to continue on an anti-PD-1 for a while after surgery, whereas the group at the top had no subsequent therapy after that 4 weeks. And then in terms of scientific investigations, these results were published in Nature several months ago, looking at neoadjuvant lung cancer specimens with single-cell RNA-seq, now looking for new markers that might be co-targeted in combination treatment regimens with anti-PD-1. And so here you see, for example, on the left, that T-cells from responders had increased levels of IL-7 receptor, suggesting that maybe a combination of anti-PD-1 plus the cytokine IL-7 might be efficacious. And on the right, you see that additional markers of non-response were observed, including some of the killer inhibitory receptors that affect NK cells that can be blocked with experimental drugs. So, I would say that not every cancer responds as well to neoadjuvant anti-PD-1 as the examples that I've shown you. For instance, we published last year a study in head and neck cancer where the response rates are much lower. We also found, interestingly, in melanoma, which is generally very responsive to anti-PD-1 therapies, that in the neoadjuvant setting, it wasn't so responsive to anti-PD-1 as a single drug. And so, then the next approach for these more difficult situations would be to use combination therapies. And we can get our clues from combinations that have already been shown to be effective for patients with advanced unresectable disease. So I'm listing some possible combinations here, including the combination of multiple checkpoint blockers, such as anti-PD-1 plus anti-CTLA-4, which is already approved in several cancer cases shown there. A combinations with chemotherapy, with kinase inhibitors. So all of these are possibilities to move into the neoadjuvant arena. Now, in melanoma, Christian Blanc and colleagues decided to test anti-CTLA-4, IPI, with Nivo, anti-PD-1, as a combination for resectable stage 3 melanoma. And again, stage 3 is metastasis to the regional lymph nodes. And what they showed here was that after only 6 weeks of this combination therapy and patients going to the operating room for complete resection, those whose tumors showed at least a 50% pathologic response fared extremely well 2 years and beyond, no relapse in those patients. Whereas the other group who didn't achieve that 50% response mark did not fare as well. And so again, this identifies for us a group of patients, the responders who don't need to receive additional therapies, and another group who probably should receive additional therapies for their cancer. In July of last year, there was a seminal FDA approval for neoadjuvant anti-PD-1 plus chemotherapy in triple negative breast cancer. So this is the first approval for neoadjuvant immune checkpoint blockade. It came from the results from the KEYNOTE-522 trial, and I think we'll be hearing more about this from one of the speakers in the next session. In this trial, patients were randomized to receive either the combination therapy, anti-PD-1 plus chemo, or standard chemo alone. And then they were followed for pathologic complete response as well as event-free survival, relapse-free survival. So these were the co-primary endpoints of these trials, and both endpoints were met, and so there was an FDA approval. Here's another study in non-small cell lung cancer. This one was neoadjuvant anti-PD-1 plus chemo versus standard chemo alone. This led to an FDA approval that happened just 2 weeks ago, and so you get the sense things are happening pretty quickly here. The co-primary endpoints were the same as what I mentioned for the breast cancer trial. So pathologic complete response was much higher in the combination therapy, and event-free survival was substantially longer with the combination therapy. And finally, I'll just point out that for cancer types where we already have approved adjuvant post-surgical immunotherapies such as melanoma, we have a little bit of a dilemma. Do we think that adjuvant is equivalent to neoadjuvant therapy, or are they different? I showed you some of the scientific rationale suggesting neoadjuvant would be better, but these are two trials that are actually addressing this point head on. So there's a SWOG trial led by SAP Patel at MD Anderson, where patients with stage 3 or 4 melanoma are randomized to either get neoadjuvant anti-PD-1 first, followed by surgery, or the opposite. And the Nadina trial, which is led by Christian Blanc and Georgina Long, patients with stage 3 melanoma are randomized to get the combination of ipi-nivo prior to surgery or surgery up front. Now, interestingly, those people who get the neoadjuvant treatment, then based on the pathologic examination of the surgical specimen, will either just go into follow-up if they have substantial tumor regression in the pathologic specimen, or if not, they will go on to receive standard adjuvant therapies for their melanoma. So these trials should read out soon, and I think it's going to be very important now for new standard of care in melanoma. So in conclusion, I've shown you that neoadjuvant checkpoint blockade can prime systemic anti-tumor immunity and prolong a relapse-free survival, that pathologic response outpaces radiographic response and provides us now with a new early on-treatment marker predicting long-term outcomes, and that the large quantities of tissue that we recover at the time of surgery are going to be vital to scientific studies to better understand how these treatments are working. So with that, I'll thank the team at Hopkins. This is the early team photographed at the time that we published that paper that Dan mentioned. So we're all smiling because we really had an inclination that this treatment might be something good. And we also thank all of our collaborators around the world and many sources of support. So thanks so much for your attention today.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. For more information about the Immuno-Oncology 360 Summit, our editorial, podcasts, and webinars, please visit io360summit.com. Thank you.